Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BikeRadio.me's The Mystical Cruise Show. For network or show information, visit www.biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, The Mystical Cruise Show with your host, Robert Sharp. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this edition of The Mystical Cruise Show's Children's Corner. Today is going to be a very fun show, and I am really delighted to have today's guest and to be talking about her book. But before I bring Janine on, I do want to let everybody know that in two weeks from today, on July 22nd, I have a really great show lined up. They are actually two children. One of them is 11 and a half. His name is Carter Reese, and his sister, who is 10, Olivia Reese. And they have an amazing life path already at such a young age. They have created a nonprofit organization called One More Generation, and it's focused on saving endangered species for at least one more generation. Anyway, you can find out about them at their website, which is www.onemoregeneration.com. Again, onemoregeneration.com. And if you are interested in listening to the show, you can go to our website, which is biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO. .me and click on the calendar, and then once you do that, you'll be able to see their show listed again for July 22nd. If you click on that link, it'll bring up the show page, and then right there on the show page after the date and time is a little blue box that says remind, and you can go ahead and set yourself a reminder. Again, this is going to be a delightful show. These will be the first children that I will be interviewing on the Children's Corner. And with the help of their wonderful dad, they're doing great things. This summer they'll be going to South Africa and to South Korea talking about saving endangered species. So that's going to be a great show, and I hope you'll be able to join me for that. But let me go ahead and start with today's show. Today's show, I really enjoyed the book called The Yawning Rabbit River Chronicle, and it is by Janine Kimball and David Ceccarelli. And their particular book is a VOYA, the Voice of Youth Advocates, Perfect 10 title, and those are considered to be a must-read and a must-buy by many young adult school and public librarians. With more than 1,100 reviews of young adult books in VOYA, in print and online in 2012, their reviewers only awarded 31 titles with this award, and The Yawning Rabbit River Chronicle was one of them. Also, at creativechildren.com, it got the Book of the Year 2013 in the Fiction Adventure Book category. And the Yawning Rabbit River Chronicle is also the winner of the Nautilus Silver Award in 2013 for young adult fiction, where they recognize books that promote spiritual growth, conscious living, and positive social change as they stimulate the imagination and inspire readers to new possibilities for a better world. And this book certainly fits all of those types of qualifications. You can find out more about the book by visiting their website, which is www.theyawningrabbitriverchronicle.com, or you can even do the first letters of each of that, and that would be www.tyrrc.com. Both of those will get you to their webpage. And from there, you can purchase their book from Barnes & Noble or from Amazon. But also, for your convenience, in the show page description, I have a link to both their website and a direct link to their book at Amazon.com. And it is a hardcover book, and again, it is a wonderful book. So with that, let me go ahead and welcome Janine to the show. Good day, Janine. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Robert. Thank you for having me in the wood. I love being in the Children's Corner. Thank you.
And thank you very much.
And I just want to say that your show on July 22nd sound so moving and so appropriate for this book, which is all about our intrinsic connection to nature. So I was like, oh, that was so touched by that, and I'll be sure to listen. So,
oh, thank you. Yeah, they're just. I mean, when you just look at their pictures, you can tell they're just magical children. You know, and what they're doing is such a wonderful thing. Yeah, and your book too. I mean, you know, that connection with nature is such an important feature that, you know, in today's world sometimes really gets pushed by the wayside.
Yes, yep, and every character in this book, really those children could relate to because, you know, some are supporting and loving nature, and others who are not respectful, you know, that creates the real conflict in the book. And so the book is all about that. You know, I'm so glad that is being respected and acknowledged for the work that we did. So, yeah, I'm really feeling good about it, about our book.
Well, you should. You know, it was a page-turner for me. I mean, my inner child just loved every bit of your book.
So. That is so great for me to hear. And I have heard that from, you know, men in their 70s in the insurance business or the mortgage business have called me and said, I couldn't go to work. I couldn't stop reading it. And I, you know, that is so wonderful to have, you know, from 8 or 9 years old to well into the 70s, just loving the story for its excitement and fun and the way it touches them. So thank you so much, and that's such a great thing for an author to hear.
Yes, yeah, you know, what I'd like to do is, you know, talk about the book and some of the characters, and I've also highlighted some, I guess if you want to call them lessons, or some of the, I guess, the teaching points the book seems to highlight. And first of all, it's broken down into really kind of three parts. The Rabbit Thief, then Many Years Later, The Big House, and then 20 years later with Nub and Nil.
Yes.
Can you explain to the listeners, you know, that type of progression?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that when we first started to think of the book started to come to us in this incredible, fun way of creating a story together, and that was part three that really came to me. But then we went to Ireland and were in this beautiful valley where we were staying, and part one just completely came to me to write, which starts hundreds of years ago. And what was amazing about that is we started to realize that we were telling an historical account of an enchanted riverland and you know, the problems that this river was having and the inhabitants. But it started hundreds of years ago when animals talked. And it progresses. So we tell a complete story in part one. And amazingly, in order to connect part one and part three, there needed to be a middle story. And that was part two. So we jump to modern times, you know, where the riverland was at peace for quite a while, and then something starts to happen again, and it's in modern times, and that's part two. And then I leave the reader with a complete mystery of where what's happening, what's going on, and that's where the bulk of the story comes in, which is part three. But you couldn't really have part three without the first two parts, and that was really, you know, I didn't plan that. It's just how the book presented itself to me. And it was fun, and it was challenging to intertwine all of the parts, but it came together beautifully and without any holes but it took me almost 5 years to really hone in and make this a beautiful, cohesive, hundreds of years story. With, as you well know, it was very complex. There was lots of little details, lots of back and forth. And so, yeah, it was so much fun. And an interesting part about that is the book changed me, because when you work at writing a book like that, and you get so deep into it. I noticed I was different once the book was done, and in a great way. I mean, but it was surprising. I felt different. So so that was that. Yeah, the story itself, just the writing of the book, was really an adventure. And then the book is an adventure for the reader. So.
Yes. Well, you know, I mean, there is so much detail in that. You know, I mean, having written my little book, which has very few characters, you know, and then I look at, you know, you have quite a number of characters. And you know, to me, it was just, I really have an admiration for the amount of work and the detail that it takes to do that. And I must tell you, from part one all the way to part three, there were some very wonderful surprises. I was like, oh my God, how could that be? You know? So that was really good.
Isn't that great? I love when I hear that, oh, you know, because surprises in stories really, I like them, just like I like surprises in life. Yeah, so yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, now, I mean, in the very beginning, part one, I mean, some of the characters, just for listeners, for you to know, one of the main character in part one is Sean the Rabbit Thief. Now, Sean plays a major role really throughout the book, but primarily in part one. And part of his job is to try and steal, to race the river goddess to bring a river back to his forest, which has been really marred by, you know, bad times.
Right. And nobody trusts him to do it. But he does it.
No. Well, you know, and I have to say, I mean, first of all, you know, in that particular section, some of the characters you have are like Grandpa and Grandma Raccoon, Jimmy the Squirrel, Finn the Bear, Mika and Mercury, the wild horses, Carol the Owl. All of those, as you were reading that section, and each of these characters spoke and had their little roles to play. I mean, it was like those animals personified. You know, I mean, it was, you did a wonderful job in, you know, bringing what, you know, Mika, a wild horse, would bring to the picture, or Jimmy the Squirrel, you know, what would Jimmy the Squirrel kind of do?
Right. Thank you so much. And, you know, that is the child in me, because that's always been with me, where animals, you know, come alive, can have a personality. What are they saying? And it was so much fun to be able to write a story where literally the animals were in charge. This was their life. They were handling it, you know. And then the cranky Edward the Eagle. And, yeah, it was just really fun to write that. And it all came to me, you know, like an inspired moment. And that's the best, you know, when all that just shows up for me. And just a piece of reality enters fantasy. When we were in Ireland going to this beautiful valley, and we were lost, but that was perfect. It was midnight. Literally in front of our car, in the middle of nowhere, a jackrabbit stood up and looked at us in the road. And that jackrabbit became Sean the Rabbit Thief. And so that jackrabbit really does exist somewhere in Ireland. And so it was so fun, you know, because in the writing of a book, it was so fun that we would be touched by these moments, and then we would bring it into the story. And so, you know, to say that this was a magical experience in itself, just to step into this world, really was true. And Sean the Rabbit Thief takes on a personality that everybody that reads about him just really does fall in love with him. And, you know, I did. And he's so endearing. So, you know, we love Sean.
Yeah, well, he is a noble thief.
Yeah. Isn't he a
noble
thief?
Noble intention.
Yes, and he's,
so.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, and then also Robert Snow, the rat, I mean, he had quite a role throughout the book, you know, and it was kind of funny. You know, I mean, this is the kind of book that I would love to see, you know, Pixar, you know, put into, you know, up as a movie. I could easily see that. It would be a wonderful movie.
Thank
now,
you. Yes.
What I'd like to do is, I'd like to talk about some of the, in part one, some of the things that I picked up that I really thought were important aspects. One of them was, you know, throughout part one, there was at one point that, you know, it was indicated Sean felt that he, quote, knew that that was what he was meant to do, that his life had prepared him for that moment of trying to bring the river back to the forest. And, you know, to me that was a really kind of a moving point to the, you know, for children reading, for them to recognize that inner knowing that they have, that there's something that they know at soul level that, you know, either they're meant to do or to be, that kind of thing.
That's so true. So true. And that was such a strength of his character that probably up until that point maybe he didn't even know until this problem presented itself and then the story of the river goddess, and he just knew he could do it. And yes, that's it. That was a great turning point for the, I mean, it is the hope that is given to the animals, and it just, what does it do? It, like, it brings Sean into a whole nother world of he goes from a thief to someone who has meaning in their life, you know? And That's important. I know that's how I feel about my life, you know, to have meaning.
I
like hearing your perspectives about what you saw in the book.
Yeah, that was. I mean, it was like I say. I mean, it was jam packed with really good, I think, good messages for children, especially in that young adult phase where they're kind of, you know, cognizant of life and some of the trials and tribulations, but they're not quite defined yet as far as how they feel and, you know, what their points of view should be. So it's like in that kind of critical phase where lots of things are being defined for them. So,
yeah, and Sean was up against a lot, you know? He was up against adversity. And, you know, it's in that adversity moment that I think a lot of our true talent shows up, you know? So that, for Sean, that was really, he was, like, born to do this. And, you know, it was the problem that gave him his meaning. So...
Yep. Yeah. Now, one of the, also in the first part, one of the areas that I really liked was the discussion of uncommon love. You know, that love is love, you know, and it discusses about love between Violet, the river goddess, and the human, Daniel.
Yeah.
And also Sean's love for Mika, the horse, you know. And one of the things I just loved was the comment about unexpressed love is such a waste. I mean, to me...
thank you. And how true is that? And, you know, all the things that I feel about love and, you know, I was able to bring into this story, and I felt really happy about that. Here was a moment that I could share that, you know, the uncommon love and... that this should never be diminished, and that love is love, and that unexpressed love is such a waste, or the biggest, or the truest, you know, moment that you should never let go. So, yes, I was really excited to be able to share that in
the
story.
Yeah, you know, because there's, you know, there's such a, you know, that's such a an area that, you know, sometimes, you know, in today's society really gets a lot of judgment around it, you know, exactly who should love who and who, you know, and, you know, and really kind of, you know, I mean, the fact that, you know, you have a goddess and a human and a rabbit and a horse, I mean, those are things that aren't, quote, supposed to happen, but, you know, but they do.
But love is love. And you know, and I very much, you know, also in our culture, there's too much emphasis on false perfection, and I don't like, you know, so I really just wanted to show that, you know, the love between two, you know, creatures, you know, non-human, human.
Right.
So thanks for seeing that.
Yeah. Well, also in part one, I loved you brought in a little bit of science with the bioluminescence. You know? So it's like, let's bring in some science for the kids here.
Yes, and then the glowing things.
Wasn't it fun
that little pine cone guy, because he was a pine cone, which the character Stan, he's a pine head. There are these little pine cone creatures, which I love. And of course, he would know all about plants, you know, and the luminous thing. And so thank you. That was fun, too, bringing in some facts about glowing plants and things.
Yeah, and that one was great. I mean, first of all, by the way, Stan and Orabel, the Pineheads, they were just—I just loved them. I just loved
Me
them.
Too.
I mean, they were kind of like my kind of folks.
Me
to hang
too.
Out with
I loved
kids.
Them. I did. I really loved
but,
them too.
Yeah, but you know, talking about the bioluminescence, that there was at one point in a tunnel where moss was glowing, and it compared it to fireflies, and then also later on. I believe it was in part three. It also dealt with the bioluminescence that happened deep in the ocean when
with the
sea dragon. So.
Thank you, thank you. She was fantastic, wasn't she? So powerful and yet so sensitive.
Yeah, really much so.
You know,
now
what? I'm sorry. Go on.
No, go ahead. No.
I'm just so excited to listen to it.
We'll talk a little bit about Neil in a bit. A couple of the other points that were in part one that I really thought were important was involved the Great Watcher. You know, there was one point, how would you explain the Great Watcher?
The Great Watcher, he was like a mystical being, but connected to the earth, who, you know, was the overseer of the sheep, but also in general, I just felt that he was quite mystical and magical and powerful and kind of very wise, and he rose out of the mountain and had, to Sean, he had a beautiful father energy or teacher energy. And he was both wise, but he was also, you know, someone didn't want to cross their path and because he had a lot of power. But Sean, being who Sean is, you know, I loved Sean for his sense of justice and fairness. You know, he didn't easily get intimidated, which was beautiful about Sean. But the Great Watcher could be intimidating, but he was also, to me, a beautiful character. And he was 100 times larger than a sheep, and he was part man and part sheep. He had a man's face but sheep horns, and he rose out of the mountain. And when he did, Sean thought it was the end of the world. But it was so great. I mean, that whole scene is just... you know, really, I think, remarkable. He has a big sense of justice.
I really liked him, you know, the character. And there was one of his, when he was basically talking with Sean, but anyway, there was the saying that sometimes there are no words to be spoken, and silence is the best choice. And I was like, and then that's when, you know, it was, you really got the sense, you know, that the Great Watcher was more like a teacher to student, you know, or that, like you said, that wise father figure.
Yes, and that's another, you know, like the uncommon love, the silence, because a lot of the cultural things that I like to bring into my books are, the power of silence, or that to have silence in your life, because our life is so fast and moving and busy. So that was where I got to put that piece in, and I believe it too, the power of silence.
Yep.
And I knew that later, that that somehow would help me solve Sean's journey, because there was a moment where he, you know, he remembered what the Great Watcher said, which is like any great teacher. Like, you're in a place and you're like, what do I do next? And then you remember what a great teacher once said to you or something. And so, but I love being an advocate of silence.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things that, you know, again, in today's world, sometimes it is one of those areas that is sometimes so overlooked, yet can be so critical to, you know, living our life, you know, in a better way.
Yeah, a more conscious way. And again, in nature, you know, like silence is important, and it's the only way to really, like, you will hear the river if you're silent, you know, and that's one of the great things the Great Watcher told Sean. So
one of the last topics on the part one, and then we're going to take just a real quick break, was
okay.
that the Great Watcher actually dealt with the giants in the area who had actually broken promises. They had promised not to eat his sheep, and when they broke those promises, they were doomed to being locked in trees. It was like, whoa, it's like really important to make sure you don't break your promises.
there was a consequence to their promise to him, and, you know, and then there was a repercussion. And yet, what I loved about that was, like, there were two things going on there. Yes, there's, you know, your promise is really important. But then I loved Sean's perspective, which was, gee, don't you think that's a little harsh? You know, because it wasn't like they, they were stuck in trees, quote, forever. And Sean's like, wow, that's a long time, you know. So, and Stan, the little pine head, was like, well, I don't think we should be, you know, doubting
the
great right. And Sean's like the wily thief, and he's like, oh, come on, don't do that, Stan. So that was I really enjoyed both those aspects. Like, yes, promises are very important. But then I like Sean's questioning of authority. I thought that was great, too.
And it was thoughtful. It was thoughtful questioning. I mean, it wasn't a rebellious, really, type of questioning.
Oh, very thoughtful questioning. You know, nothing wrong with a conversation. That's what I think. You know, let's have the conversation, you know. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Here, okay, let's take a quick couple-minute break, and then when we return, we'll talk about part two and three. And anyway, everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short message break.
Here's what Heather had to say about joy potential.
Our lives have many chapters, and some transitions are scarier than others. Fortunately, the main character in your book comes in contact with people on a new job that he thought he would never have to do at his age. They listen and talk with each other, and the process they go through is magic and life-changing. Listening is one of the most important skills anyone can have and a skill anyone can develop. I so enjoyed John and Leonora and remember thinking while I was reading the book, are they real? Some people help us put our training wheels on, and some people help us take our training wheels off. Anyway, I did so enjoy the book. Thank you.
Hi, Robert. Evelyn here from treeofenchantments.com, my little online magical forest shop. And talk about magic. Boy, joy potential is truly magical. This story about a week when everything turns to a new life path, speaking of fear turning into excitement, startling new connections with others, breathtaking new thought patterns, really, I could go on and on. The ending is such a surprise. Honestly, I couldn't put it down. And when I finished reading it, I wanted more. You don't come across books like this often in life. No matter where you are, joy potential will open awareness and simply delight. Thank you, Robert, for a really wonderful book. I look forward to the next book and to the next one and the one after that. I hope many, many people read Joy Potential. They will be very glad they did.
For more information, visit www.joybook.me. That's joybook.me. Or call 843-808-0777.
Okay, everybody, thank you for staying with us again. This is the Children's Corner, and today my very special guest is Janine Kimmel, and she is co-author, along with David Ceccarelli, of the book, the wonderful book, The Yawning Rabbit River Chronicle. Again, I do have in the show page description a direct link to Janine's book at their website, which is theyawningrabbitriverchronicle.com or simply www.tyrrc.com. And again, I also have a direct link to their book at amazon.com. But through your website, or her website, you can also purchase it from Barnes & Noble and order it at other local retailers. It is a wonderful book. You will enjoy it. If you have any children or grandchildren, they'll enjoy it as well. So with that, let me go ahead and welcome Janine back. Hey, Janine, we're back.
Hi, Robert. Glad to be here.
Thanks. Well, part two of the book, that particular one, The Big House, talks about the Millers. You know, and what I got from that particular section, I mean, that was kind of, you talked about that kind of brings us up to modern day. And, I mean, the Millers are the epitome of everything that's wrong in this world.
So, yes, it was fun to exaggerate the Millers.
Yeah. Now, I had to get over the fact that my sister is a Miller, so, I mean, it's like, okay.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, there are probably a lot of Millers out there. But, in that particular section, I mean, it was, you know, these people are really obsessed with materialism and buying things just for the sake of buying things. And and then, of course, they have two children that, like the other things, they purchased rather than actually conceived. And, Ash and Dusty. And now, during that section, there was one character, Penny Boy. That character was a magical character that you created there.
Thank you. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Penny Boy has really come out of this book. So many people have spoken about him, so much so that we really think, David and I, that we're going to have a book just about Penny Boy. That's how special and interesting and mysterious, but there's something to talk about and tell about Penny Boy that we feel. So thank you. And that has been a lot of people's feelings, where Penny Boy just strikes them as in their heart, you know. So we love him, and we're so happy that he came to us. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, I could easily see a book just about him. I mean, he was, this magical character that, didn't have a mouth, so he couldn't talk, but had this, golden coin penny for a head. But he was just, a protector, and he was, very much supportive of Dusty, and he was just very loyal. And it was really a great character. It was funny because there was actually a period of time in the book that he's just not available. I'm not going to let everybody know. You have to read the book to find out why. But there was and the book was going on and on. I'm thinking, oh, my God, where's Penny Boy?
Exactly.
I hope Penny Boy shows up again, So.
Yes. Yes, and I felt the same way. I was like, Penny Boy, we knew he would come back, but we weren't sure how. And he had to, because he was just such a great character. And so kind and intuitive, and just has a lot to offer the story. And I had this wonderful experience where this man who's in his 70s called me and really said, can Penny Boy have a mouth in the next story? And I was like, oh, that's so cute, He wanted Penny Boy. So, Penny Boy really did. And I had a man who, a radio interviewer, who absolutely said that he had never read a book with a character like Pennyboy that he was like no one that he had ever really come across in literature. So we're excited, and we love Pennyboy, and he really does touch children as well. And so when we do some art events, we Pennyboy's kind of our star of the art event. So he really has come out of this book.
He's a great character, You know, and maybe he'll have one of those, like Stephen Hawking uses, type in and it'll give him his automated voice, you know.
Right. That's a good idea.
There you go. Well, you know, the part three of your book really kind of brings everything together, you know, and that's the, you know, in part two, some darkness, you know, really kind of re-enters the picture, and in part three, it's 20 years later, you know, in time, from part two, and you know, several of the characters grow older, and the couple characters, the main characters that you actually talk about in the title is Nub and Nub Begley and Neil Turner, and now these kids, I really kind of got the sense that these were kids that were really about the same age as, like, your target market, the 9 to 14-year-old type of children.
Yes, I agree. And, yes, and very similar to the children you'll be interviewing in the 22nd. Yeah, they're the target market. They're the voices for those readers or those, you know, that's the character that they could relate to. Although I very much relate to Neil.
the river. The young guy. She's a wonderful character, an absolutely wonderful character.
Thank you.
Now, one of the areas that I thought was very creative was the bringing up of the disease that seemed to be going around the town, and the umbrella people and the no umbrella people kind of. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the idea behind those, you know, different types of characters?
I thought that was one of the central themes that really sparked this book. And what was so interesting about it was a prejudice of people who didn't use umbrellas and didn't mind getting wet versus people who did use umbrellas and thought that was very strange and crazy that people that didn't use umbrellas got wet and they didn't mind. And so, but what was great about using this as the prejudice was that it was also absurd, you know, and so it shows the absurdity of prejudice. Like, it's so ridiculous, you know, it's like, who, you know, so I kind of highlighted prejudice, but with something ridiculous, which gives it like this very approachable subject. And yet there's, you know, but it was valid. It was a very, you know, here was people who didn't believe in using umbrellas and they were fine with it. And people who thought, no, that's crazy and you can get sick and blah, blah, blah. And then in the town, there started to be this uncomfortable movement and prejudice, thinking that there was some strange disease attacking the people. It was maybe the fault of the no umbrella people, and it was completely false. So there was all this misinformation, and I find that, you know, I'm very socially conscious, and that's where I got to speak this part, you know, and I thought this was a very important point about prejudice and not having prejudice.
It is. And, you know, and the way that you dealt with it, I thought it was fabulous, you know. Again,
you
know, the nonsense aspect of it all.
Exactly.
And,
it was so ridiculous.
So anyway, I really like that. And it really brings home the message, you know. And I think, you know, children that will read that will then, you know, question. Whenever they see that kind of prejudice, they're going to kind of question, you know, is this, you know, what's this based on? You know, is this really true or not? Or, you know, why, you know, what's this all about? So, and I think that's a very important part in the development of their being as well.
Yes, thank you. I agree. And,
you know, I have to, yeah.
Okay. Good. No, I'm happy.
No, I was just going to, because we're down to 4 minutes, and I just wanted to come up with a couple other things. I know our time is going by fast.
Yes.
Now, Detective Devlin, he's a very interesting character, but at one point, I mean, his nosiness was taken by some people as to be an infringement on their civil rights, you know? And I just thought, whoa, let's bring that up. That's great. You know, let these kids be socially aware.
Yes, and of course he had bad intentions. First of all, and was a deceiver. He was a very challenging character, but a good character, you know, to bring into the story. And you're right, he was invasive, and people sort of he did invade their civil rights and their privacy, and some people acquiesced, and that was an issue I just wanted to show, you know, I loved people that, you know, kind of knew all along this guy was not quite right. So
exactly, yeah. You know, that was I really liked that. You know, the fact that you brought that in, and you know, and that the children were really particularly Nub. I mean, he just did not like the guy from the very beginning. You know, and it was great to, I think, for children to recognize, you know, that they can see in people, you know, intent, you know, whether it's good or malevolent. Yeah.
Yeah. Trust your instincts. Trust, you know, and validate what you're feeling. And Nub did. Nub was pretty confident. I loved Nub. He was very confident, and he was lovely. So
he's kind of like Sean personified, you know. I mean, you know, if Sean were a little boy, you know.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Well, and then one of the other things, you know, I enjoyed, you know, you had a little bit of shape-shifting in there, in a sense, you know, that, you know, the river goddess took on different forms, and you know, and I thought that was good. I mean, it was, you know, and again, there were several characters who, you know, were at one point were one thing, but, you know, later on in life they changed and became something different, you know. And
wasn't that fun?
I just enjoyed that.
That was fun and surprising. Those are great surprises to have happen in stories, and also I really enjoy doing that. So, you know, and it allows you to have you know, problem solving, and also, okay, who is this character? And it's just something I love doing in my stories. And so, you know, I did it in the book before. So, thank you.
You're welcome. And you know, and I'm going to kind of finish up with the one line that I think just encapsulates the whole book, and that was the comment: "I think we're all here just to be good to one another."
Yeah, so true.
Yeah.
That is so true.
And that's it. Yep.
In fact, I just wrote a little article using that line as the highlight, and that is the whole story. The whole story comes down to that one line that little Nil says, and I love that. And I'm loving that I love that you ended the show with that, and I love that you got that, because that is it. And thank you so much, because that is so great for me to hear.
Well, you know, it was to me it was very poignant, you know. I mean, it was by the time that you finished the book, you recognized that the whole book really just involves, you know, supporting one another, being respectful of each one's role and path and their strengths and their weaknesses as well, you know?
Yes, and that's shown in so many of my wonderful characters that, you know, and I relate to all those characters personally. And so, yeah, thank you so much for seeing that. I mean, that's so meaningful to me that you got that's that's it, that line when she says, "We're just here to be good to each other." So simple, right?
It is. It is. It's so simple yet, you know, so, you know, avoid it. I mean, it's just not put into practice as much as we should. But,
yeah.
But Janine,
yeah.
It was a wonderful, wonderful read. I mean, I truly enjoyed it. And, you know, I just can't say enough good about it. It was a page turner for me, you know, and I'm sure that I'll be sharing it with a lot of people. It'll certainly be on my recommended reading list in the Children's Corner on my website, you know, for people to enjoy as well.
Thank you so much, and your message of your show that I was listening to it's such a great message and so touching, and thank you for your work, and, you know, I'm honored to be here, so thank you.
You're very welcome, and I really appreciate that very much. So, again, thank you for joining me, and we will be promoting you as much as I can.
Okay, Robert, thank you so much, and thank you to the listeners.
You're welcome. Everybody, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Mystical Cruise Show's Children's Corner. And again, do be sure to try and tune in 2 weeks from today on July 22nd when I have Carter and Olivia Reese, both, 11 and a half and 10 years old, respectively, who have founded a nonprofit organization out of Georgia with the help of their parents, and they are focusing on ensuring that endangered species are around for at least one more generation. It's going to be a wonderful show. So thank you all for joining us today, and until we meet again, cruise on.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to BiteRadio.me's Mystical Cruise Show. To become a friend or follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/BiteRadioMe. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter at BiteRadioMe or at our website www.BiteRadio.me. That's BiteRadio.me. Until we meet again, cruise on.